simple questions I had. Horrible, offensive little man. He was quite rude to me. She smiled faintly at Reka. Aren't priests supposed to be the pillars of humility and wisdom? I found him terribly wearisome and repulsive, to tell you the truth. The Miko regarded the other woman without expression, refusing to be goaded. Where is he? She asked, her voice remarkably calm. Lady Satomi's lips curled even further. Oh, he's safe, she replied, waving her fan in an offhand manner. He is fairly close by, actually, though I'm afraid you'll never find him without me. Even your lurking little shinobi watching us from the shadows will not be able to uncover his location. I drew in a sharp breath, making Satomi turn her smile on me. Did you think I was unaware that the Kage Demon Slayer had infiltrated the palace? She purred, her voice very low. Nothing happens in this court without my knowledge. I know he is listening to us right now, and if he strikes me down, you will never find your precious Master Jiro, and he will never complete his mission.
Then you'll take us to him, Okame said, and she raised a brow in his direction. Right now.
Interesting. Lady Satomi gazed at the Ronin like she might a particularly obstinate dog. And what, may I ask, do you think you can do to me? Attack me here, in the Emperor's garden? She chuckled. With the exception of Taiyo-san, who would certainly face a terrible blow to his family's honor and reputation, the lot of you would be executed before dawn. There are other ways, Reka said. I'm sure the Emperor would be very interested to hear, oh, do be careful of what you accuse me, girl. The woman's voice was like silk threads that could slice open your throat. We wouldn't want other secrets to suddenly be revealed. She looked in my direction, the threat in her eyes perfectly clear. Would we? Besides, you didn't let me finish, Lady Satomi went on, her lips pulling down in a pout. You see, I could refuse and watch the lot of you strut and threaten like tiny male sparrows. But as amusing as that would be, I know I will be hounded for the rest of the night. If not by you, then by the Kage Demon Slayer, who I am sure is listening to this conversation. I do not wish to draw the ire of the Shadow Clan's immortal daimyo, nor do I wish to watch my back every time I stroll down the halls of the palace. That would grow very tiresome. She sighed. So, yes, I will take you to your priest. I have no further use for the old fool anyway. In fact, you'd be doing me a favor, taking him off my hands. She raised an elegant white hand, indicating the sweeping landscape. You wouldn't mind a quick stroll across the garden, would you? It is quite lovely in the moonlight. Daisuke narrowed his eyes and glanced to where the Emperor and his guests had gathered at the edge of the lake. The Emperor's concubine is not permitted to venture off alone late at night, he said in a voice of chilly politeness, especially with a group of strangers. There will be speculation, rumors at the very least. Will you not need an escort, Lady Satomi? You are adorable, Lady Satomi purred. Such a good boy to be concerned about staining my honor. She tittered, making Reika's scowl darken. Worry not, Taiyo-san. The Emperor and his guests will not miss me. They will not notice I am gone. Even if they do, tonight's sake is especially strong. They will forget all about it tomorrow. So, she continued, drawing back, shall we go? I assume you are eager to see if the priest is all right. Follow me, my precious ducklings. I will show you where he is. Warily, we followed the woman around the edge of the lake, away from the emperor and the rest of the court, heading deeper into the garden. As the shadows closed around us, I found myself scanning the bushes, searching for movement, for a ripple of darkness that didn't quite belong. I wondered if Tatsumi was trailing us, keeping an eye on his prey as we moved through the trees, farther from the crowds and anything familiar. I also wondered if, deep in the garden, out of sight of any guards or witnesses, she would try to kill us with blood magic. It seemed unlikely. There were four of us, six if you counted Tatsumi and Chu. The odds appeared stacked against her, but I didn't know how blood magic worked or how strong a sorceress she was. Perhaps she could summon flocks of dead crows or raise skeletons from the ground. It seemed a good idea to be cautious. Near a corner of the outer wall, we came to what I assumed was an old storehouse, a tall, square-based building with a peaked roof and a single door in the front. It was similar to the storehouses I'd seen in farming villages, except those were smaller and stood on stilts to protect crops from rain and vermin. An aura of menace hung over the building like a shroud, and my stomach curled in dread. A storehouse? Reika gazed at the structure, then glared at the woman walking calmly toward the door. You've been keeping Master Jiro locked up in a storehouse? What a crude accusation. I am highly offended. Lady Satomi didn't break stride as she reached the entrance. She pushed back the door and turned back to us. Framed in the doorway, her crimson robes standing out against the black, she gave us a cruel smile. Your Master Jiro is not here, she stated, but the path to reach him is within. Follow if you dare, little ducklings. Into the dark we go. She took a step back through the doorway and vanished into the shadows. Hurry, Reika said, stepping forward. We mustn't lose her.
Wait.
Surprisingly, it was Okame's voice that cut through the night, stopping her. The ronin stared at the storehouse with crossed arms and narrowed eyes.
I might not know a lot about blood witches and court politics, he said, but I know a trap when I see one.
Reika whirled on him. We cannot stop now, she said. I will not let that woman get away with this. Stay here if you are afraid. I will find Master Jiro with or without your help.
I didn't say I was afraid,
Okame snapped in return.
Of course we're going in. I just don't think we should walk merrily into an ambush if that storehouse is filled with demons, monsters, or giant centipedes wanting to eat our faces.
It's not, said a new voice overhead. We looked up. A figure in black crouched on the roof of the storehouse, silhouetted against the moon, a crimson scarf rippling behind him. My heart leaped. Chu flattened his ears with a growl, and Okame snorted.
There you are,
the ronin said, as Tatsumi landed gracefully in front of the storehouse. Chu's growls grew louder, but the shrine maiden spoke a quiet word, and he stopped.
Finally decided to show up, eh, Kage-san?
Okame continued.
I won't even point out the previous shinobi comment I made a few days ago that resulted in a threat to my life. I'll just stand here, being quietly vindicated.
Kage-san, Daisuke said, staring at Tatsumi. You are... Shinobi?
He's the Kage Demon Slayer, Reika broke in, her voice flat. Of course he is. How are you even surprised by this? Regardless, she turned to Tatsumi. Kage-san, you said there are no demons or other creatures lurking within the storehouse. Is that true? Kage-san. Through this whole exchange, Tatsumi hadn't said anything, his gaze solely on me. At Reika's question, however, he blinked and glanced at the shrine maiden, the cold mask of the demon slayer dropping into place as he turned. I didn't sense any, he replied. There are no demons, but... His gaze flickered to the open doorway, eyes narrowing to violet slits. There is something. Not living, but powerful. It reeks of blood magic and death. Whatever is in there, it's nothing of this realm. With a metallic shiver, Daisuke drew his sword, the razor-sharp blade catching the moonlight as it was unsheathed. Then we will face it with honor.
I was afraid you would say that.
Okame snorted and pulled his bow over his head.
Into the jaws of death once more. As long as it's not a giant centipede.
That doesn't seem very likely, I told him as we started forward. I don't think a giant centipede could fit through the door. Unless she summoned one from inside the storehouse, but then how would it move around? Tatsumi moved to my side.
Stay close, Yumeko, he said softly. If this is the blood mage that has been following us, we'll be her first targets.
I nodded, with Reika leading and Ofuda held before her and Chu at her feet. We walked across the grass and slipped into the darkness of the storehouse.
31. The Mirror of No Reflection.
The Blood Witch is close.
I could feel the pulse of dark power in the air as we stepped through the frame, and I tightened my hold on Hakaimono. The demon fought me, knowing something was close, wanting to feel blood and flesh sliding over its blade. Bloodlust surged through my veins, filling me with the urge to kill, but I was also acutely aware of Yumeko walking close at my side. I could see her from the corner of my eye, feel her presence in the space around me, and was torn between the almost painful desire to protect the girl and tear the head from her neck.
Focus, I told both myself and Hakaimono. Your objective is getting to the priest.
The room beyond the door was musty and warm, the air stale. Boxes, sacks, and wooden barrels were stacked in rows throughout the chamber, with garden implements stored against the walls and atop the crates. A single lantern hung from a wooden beam, casting a flickering orange light over the floor, but the rest of the storehouse was shrouded in darkness.
"Where's the witch hiding?"
the Ronin muttered into the silence. A soft chuckle answered him, creeping out of the shadows.
No need to be rude. I'm right here. This way, little ducklings. Follow the sound of my voice.
Cautiously we did, easing around the stacks of crates and barrels, inching toward the back wall, where a faint crimson glow began emanating from the far corner. Lady Satomi waited for us at the end of the last aisle, her features cast in a red glow. It came from a tall, full-length mirror in the corner of the room, the glass reflecting the smiling woman in its depths. A dirty sheet lay crumpled at the base of the mirror, indicating it had been covered a moment ago, and the entire structure seemed to pulse with a subtle malevolence. Yumeko took one look at the woman in the corner and leaped back, brushing my arms as she darted behind me, making my senses spike. I glanced at her, confused. She had made herself very small against my back, as if she were afraid of the mirror itself. I suppose she, too, could feel the darkness radiating from it, the sense that it was something unnatural.
"What trickery is this, witch?"
the shrine maiden said, raising her ofuda like a sword.
"This? It's called a mirror,"
Satomi replied with exaggerated slowness.
Commonly used to make certain you are presentable to the rest of society. Perhaps you should get one for yourself?
That's not what I meant. Where is Master Jiro? You said you would take us to him.
Did I? I suppose I did. Well, then.
The woman reached up and carefully drew a hairpin, long and pointed with an ivory ball on the end, from her hair. For a moment she held it before her, the thin metal glimmering in the light, before raising her other hand and jabbing the point into her index finger. Her face remained serene as she drove the needle tip into her skin without flinching. A drop of blood welled from the punctured wound, swelling like a tick on the end of her finger. As we watched, Lady Satomi calmly raised the injured hand and pressed the spot of blood to the surface of the mirror. As the glass rippled like a stone dropped into a puddle, the woman smiled.
"Your precious master is through here," she said to the shrine maiden and lifted her gaze to all of us, the challenge in her voice apparent. "Save him, if you can."
And with that, she stepped forward into the mirror and vanished through the glass. The Ronin let out an emphatic curse.
"Wait, what the hell just happened? Everyone saw that, right? You all saw her get sucked into the mirror? What was that?"
"Blood magic," I said grimly as Yumiko peeked around my arm. The reflection in the mirror was distorted now, the images hazy and twisted. A single spot of red still marred the glass floating on the surface.
"Lady Satomi is a blood mage," I confirmed, as our grotesque reflections gazed back at us, swirling in unrecognizable circles. "A powerful one, if I had to guess. The mirror serves as a gateway to another place entirely. That is not the spell of a novice."
"A gateway?"
Yumiko continued to hover at my back.
"Where does it lead?"
"It doesn't matter." Again, the shrine maiden stepped forward, her face determined. "If Master Jiro is on the other side, I will find him, no matter what stands in my way."
"Hold on, hold on," the Ronin protested. "I'm all for jumping into strange mirrors and all, but what if it dumps us into a pit of demons or centipedes?"
With a sharp yip, Chu rushed forward, leaped toward the mirror, and vanished through the glass in a streak of orange and white. As the rest of us stared in shock, he reappeared, bounding back through the mirror to give us an impatient look, before leaping through once more.
"Okay," said the Ronin with a shrug. "Good enough for me."
I shut my eyes and stepped through the gateway, feeling strands of magic slide over my skin, cold and clinging, like walking through a spiderweb in the dead of winter. When I opened my eyes, I gazed around and felt Kamigoroshi stir to life.
"Oh, Kami,"
I heard Reika whisper. The six of us, five humans and a dog, stood beneath an ancient torii gate, the once colorful wood half-rotted and crumbling into ash. Spread before us was the devastated, shattered remains of what had once been a village or town. Houses and buildings lay destroyed, smashed to kindling, walls crumbled and roofs fallen in. For many of the structures, nothing was left but a few blackened sticks and charred ruins. Rubble lay everywhere. The air smelled of death, and nothing stirred in the shadows. No signs of life or people or anything alive. This place, whatever it had been, was a village of Yude now.
"Where is she?"
the shrine maiden muttered, gazing around with narrowed eyes.
"Where did the witch slither off to?"
"And where the hell are we?"
the Ronin echoed, his breath clouding into the air before writhing away on the sharp, chilly breeze.
"Also, and this may be cause for some concern, I don't see a mirror lying around. How are we going to get back?"
There was no sign of the blood mage, or a mirror of any sort. The ruined village lay silent and empty, No glimmer of pale skin or flutter of kimono sleeves could be seen through the devastation. A half-burned banner flapped mournfully from a beam, the only sound in the absolute stillness.
"That's the crest of the Yotaka,"
the noble said, gazing the rippling half-burned cloth.
"A vassal to the Sora family, which means we're in Sky Clan territory?"
He shook his head in amazement.
"But that can't be right. Sora lands are hundreds of miles from the Imperial City."
That explained the sudden drop in temperature. Sky Clan territory lay on the northern edge of Iwagoto and claimed the frigid Korinohari peaks as their domain. From the distant snow-capped mountains looming beyond the village, we were probably on the very edge of the Sora family lands.
"Satomi is a blood mage," I reminded them grimly. "She probably has several of these gateways seated throughout the palace in case she needs a quick escape or a location to work her blood magic in peace."
"Oh, that's just great," the Lonin snapped. "Quick, let's all follow the blood witch through the mirror of death without knowing what's on the other side. Oh, look, an empty ruined village in the middle of nowhere. I wonder what could be here. Certainly not demons or gaki or..."
"Yure," Yumeko whispered.
"Or ghosts," the Ronin agreed. "Right. I'm sure there are no angry ghosts around either."
"No," the girl said, and pointed down the road. "Look."
We turned. A glowing ball of blue-white luminance floated silently in the middle of the road where nothing had been before. It bobbed once, then glided soundlessly away, trailing a long tail of light behind it, then reappeared, hovering several feet off the ground.
"Hitodama,"
the shrine maiden whispered.
"A human soul lingering on in the world."
"A ghost?"
the noble mused.
"Yes and no."
The Miko's voice was full of pity.
"Yure are the spirits of the deceased. This is someone's soul that, for some reason, is unable to pass on."
"It looks like it wants us to follow it," Yumiko observed, as the light bobbed away, then returned, pulsing softly against the dark.
The Ronin blew out a breath. "Well, there's nothing around here," he said. "Let's see where the glowing dead person wants to take us."
Cautiously, we followed the bobbing orb of light, ducking under beams and charred pillars, weaving through the skeletons of watchtowers that had fallen into the road. The village, except for our own footsteps and breathing, remained deathly silent and still. Ahead, the glowing sphere moved at a steady pace, always close enough to see, but keeping a good distance between us. Eventually, the village gave way to the edge of a forest, where the sphere drifted through the trees until it paused at the foot of a rise. A flight of stone steps, cracked and covered in roots, ascended through the trees and disappeared over the hill. It waited long enough for us to reach the first step before it floated up the staircase and vanished.
"Hurry!"
the shrine maiden said, as she and the dog took the lead.
"I can sense Master Jido is close. We mustn't lose it."
"Come on, Tatsumi-san,"
Yumeko urged as I hesitated.
"We have to keep up."
This was, I mused as we began climbing the stairs, a very strange party I found myself in. I was used to tracking down demons, blood mages, and murderous yokai, but it had always been alone. Not in the company of a ronin, a shrine maiden, an aristocrat, and a dog. And a peasant girl who haunted my thoughts, whose presence I was constantly aware of. For a moment, walking through a dark, unknown forest, I wondered if any of the others found this situation as odd as I did before I purged those thoughts from my mind. It didn't matter what they thought, or if they died while pursuing a dangerous blood mage. They were not my responsibility. My objective was to find the priest who could give us the location of the Steel Feather Temple and the scroll. Nothing else mattered. Especially since I had already been ordered to kill one of them when this was over. The stairs ended at the gates of an ancient castle, peaked roofs soaring toward the full moon. The double doors of the gates were open, creaking in the breeze, and through the opening I could see the courtyard, as vacant and dark as the village below.
"Empty," Yumeko mused as we warily approached the front gates. "I wonder what happened to the castle."
"And all the people in the village?"
the Ronin added. I didn't reply, though I suspected I knew the answer. To summon an oni and a horde of demons from Jigoku required a massive amount of blood and sacrifice, more than the blood mage had in their body.
An entire village's worth.
The Hitodama reappeared, floating in the gateway of the castle.
"It's waiting for us," the shrine maiden said, stepping forward. "Hurry! Master Jido is there!"
"A frontal assault is inadvisable," I said quietly, making the shrine maiden pause. She scowled at me, and I nodded to the gate. If this is the Blood Witch's lair, I doubt she'll be alone. And she's expecting us. If you go in now, you could be attacked by demons or worse.
"What are you suggesting, Demon Slayer?"
"I'll go. This is what I'm trained for. I'll find the priest and return before the castle defenses suspect me. The rest of you don't need to come."
"And I won't need to worry about keeping Yumeko safe."
"So we're supposed to wait here and trust Master Jido's life to you?" the shrine maiden demanded.
"No offense, Kage-san. I know you are an expert killer, but the bearer of Kamigoroshi does not inspire much faith in anything else. I will not entrust Master Jiro's safety to one who is here only for the information he possesses. I'm afraid I must insist on coming with you."
"Sadly, I think I'll have to agree," the Ronin added, grinning. "And I never really learned how to stay on command. You know what they say, can't teach an old dog new tricks."
"The Blood Witch will try to stop you,"
the noble broke in, gazing solemnly at me.
"She could summon demons and abominations and all sorts of horrors. And you still owe me a duel, Kage-san. Forgive me, but I cannot allow you to die just yet."
I looked at Yumeko, whose lip curled up at the corner.
"I'm coming too," she said calmly. "We've traveled all this way. You don't have to face her alone."
"Alone is better," I thought. "Alone means I don't put people in danger."
A chill went through me.
Why was I having these thoughts?
The safety of others was not something I'd ever considered before. Perhaps Master Iemon had been right. I was slipping, my concern for others a dangerous indication that I was losing control of my emotions. When this was over, I would submit myself to the Majutsushi's re-evaluation and hope that could destroy any lingering attachments. It was unpleasant, and I might not survive, but it was necessary. Yumeko was still watching me, dark eyes shining with worry. I didn't deserve that concern, but I didn't tell her this. What I said was, "Do what you will," before heading toward the gate and the castle beyond. The Blood Witch was nowhere to be seen as we passed through the large wooden doors and stepped into the courtyard. Rubble was scattered everywhere, broken stones, overturned barrels, a few smashed carts, all strewn through the yard. I saw several suits of armor among the stones and the glint of bleached bone that confirmed what had happened to the samurai here. Broken spears jutted from the ground, arrows were embedded in posts and beams, and katanas lay rusting where they had fallen, glimmering faintly in the moonlight.
"Looks like a battle was fought here," the noble mused.
"Or a massacre,"
the Ronin added, prodding the top half of a suit of armor with his bow. A rib cage dislodged, fell out of it, and he grimaced.
"I hope I'm horribly, horribly wrong, but this poor bastard looks like he was ripped in half."
Hakaimono's presence, which had been building with excitement and bloodlust as soon as we stepped through the gate, went perfectly still. A chill raced up my spine, and I froze, gazing around the courtyard.
"Up,"
something whispered in my head.
"Look up."
I looked up to the peaked roof of the castle silhouetted against the moon. Something dark and massive rose from the castle roof, standing against the moonlight, an enormous shadow with thick shoulders and black horns curling into the air. Even from this distance, I could see its eyes burning like embers in the night, and the mane of black hair falling down its back. It swung an iron-studded tetsubo to its shoulders, and a slow grin broke across its face as our gazes met. It dropped to a crouch and leaped off the roof into the air.
Oni!
I yelled, drawing my sword as the huge creature landed in the courtyard with a boom that shook the ground and shattered the stones beneath it. Dust and chips of rock flew outward, and everyone fell back as the Oni straightened, towering a good 15 feet overhead to smile down at us.
The Kage Demon Slayer,
the demon rumbled, its burning crimson eyes locked on me.
I've been waiting for you.
Movement rippled around us as dozens of smaller demons appeared on the walls and formed from the shadows. The Amanjaku snarled and cackled, waving crude weapons, red eyes seeming to float around us like crimson fireflies. Some of them wore pieces of stolen samurai armor, a helmet or shoulder pad that was far too big, or brandished the wakizashis of the fallen in a blasphemous parody of honor. The shrine maiden's dog gave a sharp yap and bounded forward, leaping over rubble toward the towering demon in the center of the courtyard.
Chew!
Cried the Miko as the demon casually swung its club at the fleeing animal. The tetsubo smashed to the ground, crushing stone and leaving a large hole behind, but somehow missing the dog, which fled across the stones, darted up the steps of the castle, and vanished through the open doors.
Chew! Wait!
The shrine maiden started after him, then paused, as if remembering the giant demon blocking her way. The Oni snorted, swinging its weapon to its shoulder again.
Pathetic beast! Barely enough for a mouthful, but I am not interested in dogs.
Its burning gaze swung to me again, sending a flare of savage excitement through my veins.
Come then, Demon Slayer,
it growled.
It is your blood I want, your entrails I wish to smear over the ground. Fight me alone, or with these puny mortals, it matters not. I will crush you all into pulp and scatter your bones for the Amanjaku to squabble over.
Go, I told the rest of them, forcing myself to speak calmly, to not release the gleeful laughter bubbling in my throat. Follow the dog, find Master Jiro. I'll take care of the Oni.
What? Like hell you will!
The Ronin came forward, his bow already strung, his mouth curled in a defiant smirk as he gazed at the demons around us.
I see a lot more monsters than the big ugly bastard in the center there. I can at least keep the minions off your back while you cut off its head.
Indeed, added the noble, sweeping his sword in front of him. You are not allowed to die tonight, Kage Tatsumi. Lady Yumeko, he added, keeping his gaze on the giant creature before us. Do not worry about Kage-san. I will not permit him to fall. On my honor, I will fight as if his life were my own.
The Oni chuckled.
Good,
it rumbled, and took a step forward. Stones cracked under its weight, and the air around it shimmered with heat.
Good. Come then, humans. I have been bored for days. At least try to make a fight of this.
Tatsumi,
Yumeko whispered, and for a moment, the intensity in her voice calmed the rage within, piercing the bloodlust and vicious glee.
That's the Oni who destroyed the temple and killed everyone there. Please be careful. But if you can, tear him apart for me.
The Oni laughed, the savage sound booming into the air, stirring the Amanjaku into a shrieking, cackling frenzy.
Yes, Demon Slayer, it mocked, as Hakaemono rose up with a howl of its own, turning my vision black and red. Take me apart, if you can.
I bared my teeth in a savage grin.
So eager to die, Yaburama,
I heard myself say, and for the briefest of moments caught a flicker of shock in the demon's eyes.
You always were a conniving bastard, even in Jigoku. I'll be happy to send you back.
The Oni's face contorted with rage, and it lunged at me with a roar, swinging its club in a vicious arc. I snarled back with the fury of 100 demons and leaped out to meet him.
32. Fox Magic Unleashed. I shuddered as Tatsumi gave a snarl unlike anything I'd heard before and sprang to meet the Oni, whose giant Tetsubo was sweeping down to crush him to the earth. At the last second, he twisted aside, the iron club missing him by centimeters and crashing into the stones. As he darted in, Kamigoroshi flashed purple in the darkness, cutting into the demon's arm and releasing a spray of blood. It sizzled as it touched the ground, smoke writhing into the air from the puddles, and the Oni howled. With ringing shrieks and cries, the Amanjaku surged forward, swarming into the courtyard as Daisuke and Okame raised their weapons. The Ronin's bowstring hummed, releasing arrow after arrow, and demons screamed as they died. Daisuke took several steps forward, putting himself between us and the horde. For a moment, he went perfectly still, only his pale hair rippling in the wind. Then, as the first Amanjaku reached him, he exploded into motion, his sword a blur as it sliced through demons, so quickly he was moving on to the next foe before the Amanjaku realized it was dead.
Yumeko! Reika snapped, jerking my attention away from the battle. This way, before it's too late. We have to find Master Jiro.
A bark rang across the courtyard, Chu peering at us from the doorway, looking impatient. Reika sprinted forward, kicking away an Amanjaku as she leaped over a rubble pile, making the demon yelp in pain. With one final look at the three humans surrounded by Amanjaku in the shadow of the massive Oni, I followed. Demons chased us, leaping from the walls and crawling from beneath the verandas, scuttling toward us in a red, blue, and green swarm. I dodged a pale blue demon, avoiding the spear it thrust at me, and leaped over a second as it swiped a comma sickle at my legs. Fox magic rose up, but before I could think about throwing Kitsunebi around, Reika shouted, "Light!" and flung an Ofuda at the group of demons in front of us. The paper exploded in a blinding flash that caused the mob to shriek and cringe back, covering their faces. We scrambled between them, leaping up the steps onto the veranda and ducked through the entryway of the castle.
"Close the doors!"
Reika cried, spinning and putting her shoulder to one of the heavy wooden barricades, Chu barking and dancing around her feet. I rammed my palms into the second, pushing as hard as I could, and the doors gave a reluctant groan as they swung shut. Reika shoved a cracked board through the handles just as a blow rattled the outside, followed by the angry voices of the Amanjaku.
"There," she panted, backing away. "That should hold them for now."
I dared a quick glance around, seeing a dark hall with wooden pillars marching down the center. Though everything in it, shoji screens, fusuma panels, shelves, and bits of pottery, was smashed to bits and covered in filth. "Something has been very messy," I pointed out. "I suppose demons aren't very good housekeepers. Do you think there could be more?"
"Inside the castle? Merciful Jinkei, I hope not."
Reika dusted off her hands.
"The real question is, where is Master Jiro? This is a huge castle. How are we going to find him?"
With a glow of light, the Hitodama floated through one of the walls, swirled around us, and drifted away down a narrow corridor. I nodded. "Follow the light," I said. But at that moment, an Amanjaku carrying a large bone appeared at the other end of the chamber. Spotting us, he pointed the bone in our direction and let out a high-pitched yowl that reverberated through the halls of the castle. I pinned back my ears as answering shrieks and hisses began echoing out of the darkness. "I suppose that answers one question."
"Go!"
the Miko cried as Chu darted after the Hitodama and the sound of scrabbling claws rang out around us.
We fled, following the bombing light down long corridors, through empty rooms with shredded wall panels and overturned furniture, hearing the snarls of the demons as they closed in. As we rounded a corner and burst through yet another door, we found ourselves in a large, spacious chamber of polished wood and high ceilings. Torn, filthy tatami mats covered the wooden floors, and the walls were lined with weapon racks. Empty now, but I could guess this might have been a sparring or training area once. Unfortunately, we could run no farther. Across the room, a large Amanjaku wearing a samurai helmet grinned at us triumphantly as demons poured into the chamber through a hole in the wall, hissing and cackling as they spread across the floor. Turning around, we saw that the way we'd come was blocked, too. Demons surrounded us, grinning madly as they crept forward, pointing blades, spears, and claws in our direction. Heart pounding, I drew my tanto as Reika pressed close and Chu backed up, growling and showing his teeth at the approaching demons. They laughed and snickered, crimson eyes bright with bloodlust, knowing we were trapped. "What now?" I whispered, suddenly remembering the first time I'd run into a horde of demons. Tatsumi wouldn't be coming this time. We were on our own. Reika pulled out an ofuda and gave me an impatient look.
"What do you mean, what now?" she snapped. "The demon slayer isn't here, Kitsune."
"Oh." I felt the grin cross my face before I could help myself. No Tatsumi, no demon slayer or unwitting humans who thought I was something I wasn't.
"Chu,"
Reika called, drawing back the ofuda, which started to glow.
"Guardian form now."
She hurled the slip of paper into the air, where it flew toward the dog and burst into a ray of light. The small orange dog threw back his head and howled, and as he did, swelled to 10 times his previous size. His fur changed color, turning a brilliant red, and a golden mane fell around his neck. Now he was the size of an ox, with massive shoulders, a curly flowing tail, and a thick, blocky head that was a cross between a dog and a lion. A koma inu, I realized in awe, the living incarnation of the statues that sat next to the shrine's torii gate. Chu, or the guardian spirit he had become, let out a booming roar that shook the timbers and sent several demons flying with one swat of his enormous paw. Shrieking, the Amanjaku swarmed the room, their attention riveted on the majestic beast in the center of the floor. Taking one step back, I felt the familiar rush of fox magic rise to my fingers, and this time did nothing to stifle it. As the horde closest to me rushed forward, I raised my arms, blue fire dancing at my fingertips, and sent a wave of kitsunebi into their faces. The Amanjaku screamed, cringing back from the supernatural flames, covering their eyes as the column of foxfire roared through the chamber, casting everything in a blue-white glow. The fire wouldn't burn. Nothing was in danger of incineration. But in the seconds of pandemonium that followed, I grabbed a handful of reeds from the floor and hurled it into the air, sending fox magic after it. As the reeds fluttered down, a few dozen yumekos and reikas filled the room with small pops of smoke, eliciting yelps of alarm from the shocked Amanjaku. As the replicas scattered and the Amanjaku began stabbing at them in a panic, I snatched up a pebble and threw it at the helmeted demon, where a second Chu materialized in front of him with a roar. As the demon howled and fell backward, slashing wildly with his blade, his helmet came off, rolling across the planks, and stopped in front of a pillar. Darting around the edges of the chaos, I peered through the bedlam for the real Chu and Reika, hoping they were all right. The shrine maiden stood in the center of the room, purifying ofuda in each hand, hurling them at passing demons. Where they touched, there was a burst of power, and the Amanjaku writhed away into smoke as they were exorcised. Chu rampaged around her, swatting the demons that got too close with huge clawed forepaws or crushing them in his teeth. For now, both looked like they were doing fine. The Hichodama hovered overhead, casting the room in hazy light, waiting for us. I sprinted to where the helmet lay forgotten next to the pillar, snatched it up, and put it on my head. Fox magic flared, and in a puff of white smoke, my appearance changed. Gazing down at myself, I no longer saw the elegant white robes of the Onmyoji. I saw a squat, ugly body with festering red skin, tattered rags, and hooked claws. I chuckled, and it sounded evil and raspy in my ears. A green Amanjaku rushed up to me, snarling and chattering, making frantic gestures back toward the room. I couldn't understand a word it was saying, if it was even using words, but it clearly thought I was the commander of the horde of Amanjaku, which was unfortunate for it. I stabbed the demon in the chest with my tanto, and it blinked at me in shock, before writhing into tendrils of smoke and vanishing into nothing. Well, that's useful. Bounding back into the chaos, I began slicing unwitting demons into smoke clouds while they were distracted by the dozen or so replicas still dancing about the room. Fortunately, Amanjaku didn't appear to be terribly smart, and would chase illusions of me around the room with maniacal persistence, hacking at them until they popped with a puff of white smoke and a single reed drifting to the ground. When this happened, the Amanjaku seemed to think it a victory, for they would jump up and down, pumping their fists in the air, before hurling themselves at the next replica. Slipping through the confusion, I stabbed one demon after the other, sending them back to Jigoku. An angry shout made me pause. I looked up, just in time to dodge the wakizashi of the Amanjaku commander whose helmet I'd stolen. The demon hissed and ranted at me, baring his fangs and swinging his blade in short, furious arcs. I dodged and parried with my shorter dagger, backpedaling across the room until I hit one of the pillars, then instantly ducked as the Amanjaku swung his sword at my head. The blade hit the beam, lodging in the wood for a split second, and I snatched a leaf from the floor as I rolled away. The Amanjaku commander yanked his sword from the post, spun around, and came face to face with two more of himself, one wearing a helmet and one not. For a moment, he squinted in confusion, trying to decide which was which. Then, with a howl, he lunged at me, the demon with a helmet, sinking his blade deep into my chest. Or so he thought. The Amanjaku wailed, clutching at the sword, before it exploded in a puff of white smoke, the helmet falling to the ground with a clank. The Amanjaku commander barely had time to blink in shock before I lunged through the smoke and stabbed him in the heart. As the demon snarled and twisted into fading wisps of darkness, I became aware of the silence in the room. Feeling hostile eyes on my back, I spun around to find myself in the shadow of a growling Chu, his lips pulled back from his enormous fangs, tensing to lunge. Chu, wait! It's me! I shook off the illusion in a puff of smoke, noting how very large the dog spirit was up close. As the mist dispersed, I yanked the leaf from my head and held it in front of his nose. Not a demon, I told him as his nostrils twitched. Just a kitsune, one who has thought nothing but nice things about you since you appeared in tiny dog form. See? The Komainu looked wholly unimpressed. With a snort, he turned and padded back to Reika, standing alone in the center of the room. An ofuda was held between the shrine maiden's two fingers, meant for me, I realized. Of the Amanjaku, nothing remained but a few bits of stolen weapons and armor. The replicas were gone as well, pieces of straw blowing limply across the floor. I took a deep breath and let it out in a puff. Well, that was exciting, I remarked, As Reika lowered her arms, the ofuda vanishing somewhere into her robes. Chu shook himself and shrank down to a normal dog again. I was trembling, not with fear, but with the thrill of using so much fox magic all at once. Never in my 16 years had I been allowed to unleash my full power, to really see what my magic could do. It was exciting and heady, and a little bit frightening, knowing what I was capable of. Was this the power Master Isao warned me about? What the others were afraid of?
Kitsune magic is the power of illusion. You might think it useful only for mischief, but seeing something that isn't there, or making people believe you are someone else entirely, can be a dangerous, terrifying force. Use it carefully, lest you become an instrument of chaos.
Your ears are showing, Reika remarked in a flat voice, bringing me out of my thoughts with a start. I can normally see a faint outline, but they're fully exposed now. Probably a side effect of using so much of your power. I swallowed, resisting the impulse to reach up and touch them. Do you think they'll go away eventually? I asked, knowing that if my ears were visible, my tail probably was as well. That would be a definite problem if Tatsumi or any of the others saw them. What will we do if they don't fade before we leave the castle? Worry about it when we get there, the shrine maiden answered. We have to keep going. She looked at the Hitodama, who still hovered near the ceiling, glowing faintly. If you are truly here to help us, she said as the glowing orb trembled, then lead on, and let us hope that there are no more surprises ahead. The Hitodama hesitated a moment. Then it floated from the ceiling, circled the room once, and flowed out another door. No more demons ambushed us on our way through the ruined castle. Either they had fled or we had killed them all. The light wove unerringly down narrow hallways, through more empty, destroyed rooms, and finally led us to the top of a wooden staircase that led down into the dark. He's close, Reika murmured as Chu glanced up at her and wagged his tail. I can feel his presence now. Hurry! After descending the flight of stone steps, we came into a large room. Torches stood in the corners, flickering with ominous red flames, and cells with thick wooden bars lined the walls, but all were empty. In the center of the room, a man in a tattered, once white robe sat cross-legged on the hard stone floor, hands cupped in his lap as if in meditation. His head was bowed, his shoulders hunched, and he didn't move when Reika called his name. Manacles encircled his wrists, rusty black chains that shackled him to the stone floor. A small white dog, nearly identical to Chu, lay motionless beside him. Both were encased in a flickering, nearly invisible dome of power, a barrier much like the one I had seen the night the Silent Winds Temple was attacked. But this one was much more menacing, radiating evil and corruption, making my skin crawl the closer we got. Blood magic, the shrine maiden whispered, sounding furious and horrified. She pulled out another ofuda and raised it before her, paused a moment while the paper flared with energy, then hurled it at the barrier. It flew through the air and struck the dome flat, the word for purify written across its surface, before the barrier flickered once, twice, and then shattered like wasps swarming from a hive. Master Jiro! Reika and I hurried forward. As we drew close, I saw that the black chains around the priest had vanished, melting into a line of dark reddish sludge across the floor. Master Jiro, Reika said again, kneeling before him, while Chu whined and shoved his nose against the crumpled form of the white dog. Master, can you hear me? Are you all right? A shuddering, wheezy breath came from the hunched form,
and his shoulders trembled as he raised his head. His face was gaunt, his cheeks sallow, and his eyes were sunken pits in his face, looking distinctly skeletal. He blinked at Reka, brow furrowed, as if unsure he was seeing correctly.
Reka-chan, he whispered. Are you really here?
Yes, Master Jiro, the shrine maiden returned softly. I'm here. When you didn't come back, I knew something was wrong. We're here to rescue you. Can you stand?
I don't know.
The priest tried to straighten, then slumped back with a groan.
I'm weak, he whispered. That woman used blood magic to keep me here. She asked me questions, and when I didn't give her what she wanted, she started draining my life force. Ko's too.
He glanced at the still motionless white dog beside him. Chu had given up trying to nose it to its feet and now sat there whining and looking miserable.
I tried to make her go home, the priest muttered, but she wouldn't leave me. The demons, they would have tormented me even more had she not been here.
Watching the white dog, I gasped as her side rose and fell. It was slight, but it was there. She's alive, I told the priest, stepping around Reka. She's not gone yet. We can still save you both. He peered at me, wan confusion crossing his face.
Kitsune?
He murmured and shook his head.
I must be hallucinating after all.
Abruptly, Chu leaped to his feet, wagging his tail as the white dog suddenly stirred. Raising her head, she peered around in confusion before she spotted me a few feet away, and her lips immediately curled to show tiny fangs. I took a quick step back, retreating behind Reka as the dog staggered upright. Still glaring at me, she wobbled shakily over to the priest, whose face lit up as he saw her.
Come on, Master Jiro, Reka said, putting one of his arms around her shoulders and gently drawing him upright.
He staggered and swayed, but finally got his feet under him.
We are leaving this place. Let's hope the others are still alive so we don't have to face that Oni again.
Oni?
The priest gasped as my stomach twisted.
Yaburama is still here?
You know his name? I asked.
The priest turned wide, fearful eyes on me.
Sadly, I do. Yaburama is a monster. He is one of the four great demons of Jigoku, the Oni generals of Ohakumon himself.
Master Jiro's face contorted in fear and loathing.
I do not know how that woman, even with her control of blood magic, could have summoned something like Yaburama into this world and not had him turn on her immediately. Even minor demons are difficult to control, and Oni like Yaburama would require an extraordinarily powerful blood mage to have any hope of binding him to her will.
We have to get out there, I told Reka, who nodded. Tatsumi and the others are fighting the Oni now. We have to help them. Master Jiro, you're the head priest. Can you do anything that might stop Yaburama?
I am sorry, Kitsune,
Master Jiro said, his eyes genuinely sympathetic.
I am grateful for your assistance, even if I am unsure of your motives. But we cannot stand against an Oni of that power. The demon generals are very nearly immortal. If your friends stayed behind to face Yaburama, they are likely already dead.
33. Yaburama's Folly. This was going to be a fight. I dove aside as the Oni's tetsubo swept down, smashing into the earth and sending rocks flying. I rolled to my feet and instantly had to spring back as the huge club raked across the ground, missing me by a thread and hitting several Amanjaku who had swarmed down to ambush me. They flew through the air before exploding into writhing tendrils of smoke as they returned to Jigoku, and the Oni grunted.